Shabbat shalom, everyone. I am here with my beloved colleagues in our beloved Gann Chapel. We are taping this on Wednesday, April 10th. So, colleagues, I need to unpack something that happened on Sunday. It left me with vertigo. It was so dizzying. And I think it's evocative of a place that many of us find ourselves a few days before Passover. Sunday morning, we had Shai Held, our wonderful guest speaker, who was in dialogue with Mark Baker. And Shai is brilliant and soulful, and Mark Baker is brilliant and soulful. And their entire dialogue was so just powerful and poignant. And when people walked out, they all said some version of, "Oh, that was amazing. Oh, Shai makes me want to be a better person." And I felt that absolutely keenly. The only catch was, as I had indicated in the teaser about this class, they did not mention October 7th. There was no Gaza, there was no war, there was no October 7th, there was no hostages, there was no Iran, there was no nuclear. There was just talking about, it was very much a talk that could have been given before October 7th, and it felt like that. And without the weight of October 7th and all those horrible issues, oh, it was just beautiful. But then I went from there, like so many people did. We went from the dialogue between Shai and Mark to 255 Homer Street, to the house of Miriam and Jeff Kosowski. And of course, they had a whole hostage wall with the poignant faces and names of the hostages, and some criminal blacked out every name, and some criminal blacked out every face, and this was to rededicate that. And so Shai's talk was about love and inspiration, and this rededication of the wall was about a fight. It was about, we will not be cowed. We are going to resist anti-Semitism. And Jeff, the homeowner, gave a lengthy disquisition about the many examples of Jew hatred and anti-Semitism in our community. By the way, he wasn't wrong. I mean, I would say amen to every one of the bullet points. He was not wrong, he was right. But the energy of that is not love. And so you have a morning of love, oh, makes me want to be a better person, and an afternoon of, we are not going to succumb to anti-Semitism, fight. And I'm trying to put that all together. So let's thank God for the gift of doing that together. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lasok b'divrei Torah. Barev na Adonai Eloheinu et divrei Toratach b'finu u'b'fi amcha b'Yisrael. V'nehiya anachnu v'tzatzaeinu v'tzatzaei amcha b'Yisrael. Kulanu yodei shemecha v'lomdei Toratecha lishma. Baruch atah Adonai hamelamei Torah l'amo Yisrael. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, asher bachar banu mikol ha'amim v'natan lanu et Torato. Baruch atah Adonai notein ha'Torah. So, dear colleagues, how did you guys process that morning and or that day, that morning leading into that afternoon?
Well, I would say that, you know, humans are complex, and love and a desire to protect who we are, you know, with the anger that was, you know, there was not the anger and the angst that was evident at the ceremony and thinking about the hostages, are not. Even though they're somewhat polarizing, but they're really not, because in one way that you can show your love for Am Yisrael is with that extreme passion to protect the Jewish people, and this is all about loving each one of those hostages, loving each one of those families who's had a loss, who's had an injury. One way that we process that love is through, through feelings of anger and feelings of revenge. I think that those two can live side by side in who human beings are.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't hear as much of the absence of October 7th as you did. You kind of had to listen in for it, but to me, his whole discourse on the unflinching honesty of our tradition and the way that Judaism looks at our world and refuses to say this is the best of all possible worlds, but rather understands the gap between what is and what can be, and as he called it, names that what is really fundamentally, profoundly broken, and yet holds out a vision that we can still, no matter how far we are, move towards better. To me, I found that really spoke to my existential need in after October 7th, because it's so easy to feel like the world doesn't see and doesn't engage, and that we're just alone in this brokenness, and that the image of God kind of out there is also not connected to the reality of the world. For me, Shai brought home the God who is with us in our pain and our devastation, and yet gives us the opportunity to get up in the morning and try again.
Elias, or at least any general frames about how to think about the Shai lecture and or the Shai dialogue, and then the rededication.
Sorry about that. At least in my own heart these days, and for the last months, there is no much room for love.
No, right.
Unfortunately, there is not. We all have somewhere hiding, you know, that sentiment. But, you know, sometimes in certain occasions, we should try to gather all that energy and do something nice. Last night was a proof of that, all right?
Last night being Project Mana.
In spite of all, we gathered together and we did a wonderful, you know, mitzvah to feed those who are suffering. And as Brenda Brown mentioned it yesterday, they have even more people because of the immigrants and everything. So we should, at least myself, I find that I need to make an extra effort to find love in my heart in these weeks.
Yeah, so I want to let me just pivot off of that if I can, and Elise will get your voice throughout the course of the conversation. So Shai devotes a chapter of his book. The book is Judaism is About Love, and chapter 11 is called Love in the Ruins. And here's how he frames it, and he frames it in chapter 11, but if you haven't read it, and he also talked about it in his sermon last week, and if you haven't heard it, here's what he talks about. He talks about how when the temple stood, the temple was Judaism. This was the whole deal. This is where people went when they were happy. This is people went when they were sad. This is where people went when they felt guilty and they needed to atone. The temple was their Judaism. And then when it was destroyed, the temple was no more. So Shai didn't say this, but what I heard him say in that was, what if God forbid a million times there was no more Israel? Like, how would we do life? How do we do Jewish life? How do we get up in the morning if God forbid there was no Israel? That was how they felt in the year 70 when there was no more temple, right? There was like the core of their life was gone. Now what do they do? And in it, he offers us three different moves based in the sources, Jewish sources. This is the reading that I gave you from chapter 11 for how to do life without the very center of your life in your life anymore, how to do it. And his first move, and he says that in each of these cases, he offers this up as love. The first one is chesed. He brings a teaching from a rabbinic source, Pesikta d'Rav Kahana, that two sages are walking and they see the destroyed temple, and the first one weeps, what are we going to do? There's no temple. And the second one says, hey, hold on, there's no temple, but we can still do chesed. And God loves chesed, kindness, even more than God loves sacrifice. Chesed we can still do, kindness we can still do, gifts that repair the world we can still do, and if we do that, that's love, and that's going to heal the world and going to heal our world. Let's talk about that first move. We're going to heal in a world where there needs to be a hostage wall dedication because some criminal blacked out the names of the hostages. We can still do acts of chesed, acts of loving kindness. Elias, talk about that in connection with Project Manna that we just had last night that you mentioned.
Yeah, can I hear Alisa's voice on this?
Sure, sure. By all means, Alisa.
So I think I heard something slightly different, a flavor of the same, but it's not so much about healing the world, but that the temple offered us a way to get close to God and a way to solve the problems of our own distance, whether that's by our own sins or from the beating that we take in the world. And so chesed isn't necessarily about fixing the world out there, but it's about allowing us to draw nearer and closer to God. Mm. And that feels really real to me, especially in this moment, because we can't fix October 7th, and we can't fix the war that's ongoing, and we can't fix the intensity and the danger that Israel is in. That's all beyond us. And all of that can cause us to feel very distant, both from God and from the people around us. And the thing that happened in Newton and the ongoing anti-Semitic attacks, those make us feel very alone in the world. And I think chesed has the ability to reconnect us to the people around us. It was something that I really felt so poignantly last night, was that the act of coming together to raise money for people in need was such a joining force, and standing there together and singing together. And some of it was music that, I mean, I don't typically sing those songs, and I don't typically sing some of those words. And yet there was a magic to it and a power to it. And so I think the teaching about chesed is that in a world where you feel alone, in a world where you have no agency, in a world where all the systems are broken down, you still have this one remaining choice that you can make, and that is to do acts of loving kindness.
So could I ask you guys, you know, at the end, if you weren't at the Project Manna concert, and I've been to 27 of them, of the 34, at the end was a moment that I will never forget, and it was the most poignant moment, which was, so for those who weren't there, I'm going to ask one of my colleagues, will you describe what happened with Brenda and the gift or the blessings that she bestowed and how you experienced it?
It was really, it was very moving. I was very surprised by it, but the fact that what she did, she did a really interesting move. You know, every year since we've started this, for the 34 years, there's always been a person or an organization that has won the Hunger Relief Award, and for some very specific actions. And the fact that she turned that around and said, the world is so broken now that what we need is to come together with prayer and with love, which is exactly what Shai Held said. That was such an amazing move, and the fact that she did that on the weekend that Shai Held was here talking about it without probably knowing about it, it brought such a full circle and connection to it. So.
And talk about the blue and the Yahrzeit candles.
So she also just saw us as Jews. She saw our suffering. She named the hostages. She said, I came in here and I saw the blue ribbons tied around, and that's a symbol of the hostages, and I didn't even know it, but I had gone out right before and said I needed blue bags for this moment, and that somehow I'm connected with you. I see you. I feel your pain, and I stand with you in it, which was just profoundly moving.
Yeah, and she gave us, and inside those blue bags were
Yahrzeit candles.
Yeah.
And a stand so it doesn't ruin any furniture, which is extra careful.
And an offer to pray with us. So I think nothing says that chesed prong of Shai's Love in the Ruins chapter more than Brenda's gesture in response to Project Manna, which is when we do chesed, we're less alone. The other people in the world are less alone. That's one way to do love.
Right. But in addition, at least for me, it's also healing for us to do this type of events.
Yeah.
Because we are feeling, not only we feel good about what we're doing, we're really doing something nice for the community, for those who are suffering, those who don't have any food to eat. And it's part of the process of how do we channel everything that is happening. Maybe that's one way.
Well, and I think that chesed creates chesed. And so one of the things that's really interesting this week in particular, years ago, a family in our community welcomed an Afghan refugee into their home. And he is this brilliant, funny genius. His name is Malyar. He is currently studying diplomacy, international relations at Tufts. And he became part of their family, and they just welcomed him, and there were no strings attached. It was just about chesed, and he calls himself he likes to pretend like he's an Israeli. He loves Jewish community. He loves Shabbat. He loves connecting. Then, back when Afghanistan fell, we welcomed two families. Malyar stepped forward and said, I will help you. I'm going to translate. I'm not just going to translate the language, but there was a lot of cultural barriers that we had. And so he offered to translate those cultural barriers. And he was he was essential to our project and helping us to welcome these families. And the people that came together with Malyar to help these families became fast friends and close friends. Fast forward, Malyar's family just got accepted to come from Mexico on the condition that we would support them. So we have another task force that's supporting his family of 9. They arrive tomorrow. And the chesed just keeps growing and expanding, and the community that is supporting them keeps growing and expanding. And that initial gesture of love that one family took to welcome one person into their home has now supported 3 families, and it's built a community of over 200 within our Temple Emmanuel community who are finding deep meaning in supporting these refugees. It's been just incredible to watch. So I think that's also core to this teaching of Shai's about chesed. It's you're not alone, and the connections are far beyond what you could ever imagine.
And have those connections changed their cultural stance towards Judaism, Jewish people, Israel?
So for sure, I think Malyar talks about that there aren't Jews in Afghanistan. So he met Jewish people for the first time coming here and loves Jewish tradition. I would say the interchange between hospitable cultures has been really beautiful, and that's we get to see the things that we share. The two families that we had been supporting didn't speak any English. That was a really hard language barrier to come across. Malyar's family does speak English, so I'm really excited to see the kind of connections that we can build. What I would say is that the families in our community who joined together, who set out, their mission was not necessarily, I don't necessarily want to make more friends. I mean, that'll be nice, but their mission was, I want to help these families. They have created this incredible family, this incredible community, and are more connected than they've ever been with Temple Emmanuel. So I think there's ripples of impact that continue to be felt.
Yeah, Lisa, so I want to build on that very powerful set of stories you shared, because it speaks to the power of pivot, where our families pivot from our own worries and our own situation to pivot to be helpful, and that creates all kinds of good. And these families who are immigrant families from desperate circumstance pivot, and it just creates all kinds of good. Which leads to Shai's second point in his chapter, Love in the Ruins. And he talked about this on Shabbat morning as well, and this was the part that really, of all of his points, really landed with me. He talks about Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av. Tisha is 9, the 9th of Av, worst day in the history of the Jewish people. Every bad thing happens on Tisha B'Av, the destruction of the first temple, the destruction of the second temple, the generation of the Exodus being told they're not going to be able to go into Israel, and so on and so forth, the worst day ever. And then he quotes a teaching that on the 15th of Av, it's called Tu B'Av. Tu is the Hebrew letter Tet, which is 9, and the Hebrew letter Vav, which is 6, so 9 and 6 is 15, Tet and Vav is 2, and the 15th of Av, it was the happiest day ever, because the maidens of Israel would go to the vineyards and they would find partners. And he points out, isn't this interesting, that Shiva is not even over, right? On the 9th of Av, we lost everything. And on the 15th of Av, 6 days later, Shiva's not over, we're rediscovering love. And he takes that pivot from the 9th of Av to the 15th of Av, from utter destruction to renewal and rediscovery of love, as a challenge for us to pivot from our own darkness to our own version of the 15th of Av. What comes up for you when you think about Tu B'Av, and how does that concept resonate for you now?
To me, that was a revelation. I never thought about that, other than you guys, but I never thought about this idea that I knew that it would come like, how many days after? 6 days, if I count correctly.
Yeah.
But I never thought about this idea of Shiva. And it's
Shiva, not over.
Right. Mind-blowing. And that there will be a holiday like that. It will be interesting to see when that holiday started and why. And but it was like a new awakening for me.
So have you, yeah, so I also mind-blowing, that feels right. My question is, how do we channel that tuba of energy? How do we channel that kind of pivot?
Well, I think the Mishnah also says that the other day that happened is on Yom Kippur. So I think, so there's an element of the power of atonement bringing people together to bring a positive to the world. And so I think that's a creation of how we create community. The power of creating community is when we come together in atonement. And you know, the rabbis describe the destructions of the temple having to do with chinat sinam, that we need to atone for not respecting each other. So coming together for atonement for respecting each other is both personal and communal.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I too had never made the count. You know, we always treat Tisha B'Av as a single day,
right?
It's the day
not
when everything happened, not thinking about, wow, you know, when you experience these things, they must have felt as we felt now, that the Shiva, that the mourning goes on and on and on. And how do you hold that joy in the same way that it would have been impossible. It was impossible on October 13th for us
right.
to be fully joyful. And that's what's so interesting about Tu B'Av for me is that, you know, Shai didn't spend a lot of time in his talk, particularly not on Shabbat morning when he unveiled this, defining what love is. But in his book, he has a whole section that unpacks sort of what is love? How are we defining this term? And it's different from how we normally think about it or how we culturally think about it. And here on Tu B'Av, it feels to me like the love that's being expressed is a love of consolation. It's a love of partnership that helps you face when you stand hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder with somebody. It's not only happy, joyful, woo, 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 woo. It's also we're going to walk together through this world, whatever will come, and we will strengthen each other through our partnership and through our love to face the world and make it better. And I think that's something that we ought not lose. And there were people who said to me after his talk that his whole thing about love didn't land because I can't love Hamas. How do you love Hamas? And I think one of the great gifts that Shai gave us was to expand our understanding of love as functioning in very different ways in very different places. And one of those ways is consolation. And another of those ways is to say when we love someone, that doesn't mean that we tolerate everything that they do or accept everything that they are. That when he's talking about love and sharing with us the Tu B'Av example, he's not saying love Hamas,
no,
right? He's
right.
actually saying love the future, love consolation, love building something more beautiful.
Yeah, I'll just say on that I think the Jewish people in North America instinctively got that the Tu B'Av love that you're defining, which is walking with, sharing a responsibility together, moving forward, being with each other. You know, right after October 7th, JNF, which I didn't even know what they did. I thought they did trees. They did so much more than trees. They've had a fully subscribed mission of North Americans every week who go to do what you're talking about, Michelle. Just literally to deal with fields that hadn't been dealt with, to paint yeshuvim and yeshivot and schools that had been abandoned after October 7th to help with the refugee families up north and south. Just helpfulness. So that's love through deed and love through walking with. I want to go to the third piece. So we've talked about chesed, and thank you, Elisa, for the idea of a chesed which connects us and joins us and creates lots more chesed. We've talked about the pivot of from Tisha B'Av to Tu B'Av, and that could be love by walking with and shouldering together. His third one is just so interesting, and I myself had never seen it before. And he didn't really talk about it in his sermon or teachings, but it's in chapter 11. I want to read it. He quotes Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, the Rav, who was, you know, the greatest 20th century Orthodox rabbi, and he calls it responding instead of explaining. And I want to read this, and let's first think about it in its own context, not about October 7th and Pesach coming up and Hamas and Gaza, but we'll get to that, but just in its own context. Let's say somebody you love gets cancer, somebody you love dies young, right? You experience an illness and you can't shake it. There was some terrible thing happens to you or somebody you love and you don't know why. And let's think about the Rav's wisdom. What does confronting suffering require of us, Shai asks. I often come back to an argument made by Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik about what he sees as Judaism's approach to the problem of evil. The ideal Jewish response to evil and suffering, he says, is not metaphysical, but practical. And he quotes Rabbi Soloveitchik. We do not inquire about the hidden ways of the Almighty, Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, but rather about the path wherein a person shall walk when suffering strikes. We ask neither about the cause of evil, nor about its purpose, but rather about how it might be mended and elevated. How shall a person act in a time of afflictions? We cannot know why a good God permits so much excruciating suffering, but often, at least, we can decide how to respond. What do you think about the Rav's wisdom here? Don't marinate and cogitate, act.
I think it's so helpful, and at Project Mana, last night, we had Brother Dennis Slaughter back for the first time in a number of years, and he brought with him really beautiful choir. And there was one piece that was completely a solo. And the gentleman who did it sang about, I have a dream, right? And in my dream, I wish I had the words in front of me because they were really beautiful, but they amounted to, you know, I don't ask why the suffering, I am called to task, right? What is my task? And I found that really to be a beautiful articulation of exactly this idea, which is, I think, too rarely articulated in our world. I think we too often search for the why rather than asking ourselves, what now?
Can we double click on that, Michelle? Because I had never seen, I've been reading sources for a long time. I'd never seen this source. I just never seen it. And it's so interesting, and I just want to double click on it. You know, when something bad happens, it does feel like it's a natural human instinct to say, why me? Why did it happen? I mean, we are so constituted that we're looking for why. And the Rav's wisdom is, you know what? There's no good that comes from that. There's no gold in those hills. There's just no gold in those hills. Why me? There's probably not going to be an answer that satisfies. So instead of why me, the better question is, what do I do now? Aliza, what do you think about that wisdom?
I think it's beautiful. I also think that you know, telling somebody not to think about the elephant in the room is not the most helpful strategy. And I, you know, were I to have a conversation with Rav Soloveitchik, I would admit I have not his amount of learning and study, but I think that there's a place for saying, you know, how do you work with that question? Because you have to work with that question on some level. And I think that's been so hard for us from October 7th is just like processing the evil and processing the hatred. Like, how do we face a world? And I think our answer to that has to be based on that question.
Right.
Because one of the interesting things for me at the beginning of the war was hearing the rabbi for Truah, who had been opposed to actions in Gaza previously, who said, like, no, we have to go in now. Like, we have to go in. This is the time because I hear the evil and I hear the desire to kill us and I hear the desire to torture us and we cannot live with that. And so I think Rev Soloveitchik's, you know, idea of like, don't think about why, but just like what you can do is helpful, but you also have to think about the why. You also have to be in that. So I think the response is important, but I also think that you can't, and you can't just like shove it down either, because if you're feeling like, why me? And you're just like, well, I'm not gonna face it, I'm just gonna go ahead. That just sets you up for cycle of mental health challenges down the road.
You can never shove down. You can never.
How many times you've said it in the Bima, you know, life is not what happens to us, but how do we react or what do we do about it? To me, it's a little confusing, to be honest with you, some parts of these excerpts, because based on my experience, there are two different things. One is gemilut hasadim, which is good actions. And sometimes, not necessarily, that goes along with love. Mm-hmm. All right? To do the right thing, because you know that is the right thing, not always goes together with love, the full investment and the full feeling that I love whoever I'm going to help, and I do it because just pure love. So that is, to me, is interesting.
Right. Well, and I think also pure love can look different. Like, pure love for someone who's struggling with addiction sometimes means cutting them off and setting really hard boundaries and doing things that don't necessarily read as love, yeah, but are actually love in the long term.
Yeah. I want to get back to, though, first of all, anything that Rav says, where we mere mortals are tempted to say, oh my God, that's so wise. But at least I really appreciated your honest reaction, which is, number one, to say to somebody, don't think about that. Just don't think about that. Stop thinking about that. Stop thinking about that. Makes you only think about that, and you can't shove it down, and it does have a lot of dysfunction if you try to shove down questions, and the question of why is just natural. But beyond that, it is also helpful. I mean, it will certainly be helpful for Israel to understand, how did October 7th happen? Like, what failures of their protocols, their intelligence protocols, military protocols, state government protocols, institutional protocols, what happened so that we don't do it again? So obviously you need to ask why did that happen, et cetera. But I think, you know, for me, the fundamental thing that I do not understand still now, and I would love to understand with all respect to Rabbi Soloveitchik, is why even on October 7th and October 8th, before the war started, before the innocent civilians in Gaza were caught in the crosshairs, on October 7th, on October 8th, the hatred of the Jewish people, the college campuses, the faculty and students at the best universities who didn't care that these Jews died and said we had it coming to us, I still don't understand that. And even after David Wolpe came here in March, I still don't understand that. So perhaps, maybe that suggests, Pretzling, that the Rav was right. Because, you know, I wonder about that. Like, how did they hate us so much even before the war that they didn't care about us? And after thinking about that morning, noon, and night for 6 months, I'm no closer to an understanding. So perhaps his point is, it's what we do, not what we marinate and cogitate. So let me just ask at the end, when you think about the Rav's wisdom, it's about what you do, not about the endless marination. What does the Rav's wisdom call you to do now, 10 days or so before Pesach? How would you operationalize the Rav's wisdom?
So I would reread him.
Okay.
I would change him. I would say, not we do not inquire, but we do not allow our inquiry to prevent us from acting. And so we take the time to think, and we take the time to process, and we take the time to ask the questions, because that's how we learn and grow. And then we dedicate ourselves to loving kindness. We dedicate ourselves to service. And that, I think, is a really important teaching. This week I'm spending a lot of time helping to coordinate for the family that's arriving. But I think also, just in terms of Passover, I want to be asking the question about, how can I liberate myself from the chains of hatred and fear and worry and anguish, and allow myself to move forward freely with love?
To me, I'm sorry that I go back to last night, the Mana concert, but it sums up a couple of things that I think that are crucial. One is the Gemilut Hasadim aspect of helping those in need. And second was your move that was brilliant, giving Brenda Brown a book, teaching who we are, teaching what we stand for and trying to understand that there are human beings on both sides, on both ends, and dialogue and construct.
Great. Michelle and Dan, any last words before we wrap up?
I think I'm not going to reinterpret the Rob. I'll keep him exactly how he speaks, because I think there's something so powerful in the wisdom that there are actually times to put down the question. And I think Pesach that we're coming up to is actually one of those times where we sit at our tables, where when we break our middle matzah and we put the larger half for our afikomen, and we say, why are we going to hide that? Because that which is hidden is greater than that which is revealed. And the idea that we're not always going to get the answer right now, but we are longing for our deeds in this world to someday make us worthy of knowing. Mm.
Thank you, Michelle. Dan, last comments.
So I was thinking about a couple things. One is, like what Aliza said, trying to find a way to release some of the complexities and be able to move forward. The other thing I was thinking about is one of the songs that we sang last night, the Madonna song, which some of the words are, life is a mystery, and we all must stand alone. And I'm thinking, well, that's not necessarily true, because the idea of standing alone is not helpful. It's really the opposite, that we have to stand together, and I think that standing together is what's going to help us move, be able to wend our way through this very complex time.
Great. So, colleagues, thank you for that. Here's how I want to leave it with you. My prayer for everybody's Seder table is that all the guests at your Seder table, and you as those who are hosting Seder table, will have the experience that most folks had when they heard Shai and Mark Baker on Sunday morning, which is, it makes me want to be a better person. But that's the goal of a Seder, that the Seder is so inspiring that you're a little bit different after it, because you have some more energy and juice for how to be a better person. So I want to leave you with three questions. I know four questions is the trope of Passover, but from Shai's chapter 11, I want to leave you with three questions, not answers, three questions. One, what is the chesed energy that you can bring to your Seder? How can you talk about doing goodness in the world in a way that will ramify and that will amplify and that will inspire and that will bring people together? The second is, what's the pivot? How can you do a pivot? How can we do a move from Tisha B'Av to Tu B'Av, from destruction to rediscovery of love? What does that pivot look like? And the third question is, I really appreciated, Aliza's, your comments about the Rav. We have so many questions that are unanswered and unanswerable and that don't go away. And how do we say yes to those unanswered questions that gnaw at us, and despite that, act in ways that make for a better world? Shabbat shalom and chag hashem v'sameach.